evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station. Broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday evening, February 8th, 2009. It is now about 8.01 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone, and during our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620, 646-652-4620. You can email us anytime at comments@libertytalkradio.com. If you are listening to rebroadcast, you may also phone in your comments to 918-919-0101. I encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com, his weekly newsletter. In his weekly newsletter, Andy Sutton discusses economic issues and how they affect you. You can also listen to Andy's commentary in contrariescafe.com, and he will be our co-host this evening. Lastly, I would like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Well, good evening, everyone. This evening, we'll have as a co-host not only my wife, who will be sitting in the studio with me, mostly listening, I think she said, but we also have Andy calling in, and Andy will co-host, and we'll have as our guest Fred A. Karasch, and he is the author of 40 Years a Speculator, giving us a fresh perspective on how to invest your money. I've listened to him on two other occasions, and he is absolutely fascinating. In fact, we have someone on the line now. Maybe that's Andy. Let's see who this is. Hello, caller.
Joe, how you doing? Andy here.
Oh, okay, Andy, that is you. Okay, I didn't recognize the number. Very good.
Your co-host has arrived.
I was just doing the introduction, and folks, Andy will be our co-host this morning, and in a minute, Fred will be calling in, and I'm looking for a very, very exciting evening. In fact, I've been a little apprehensive, because when we have something such as this, you're always concerned about everything going correctly, and this is one of those times that I'm really excited about this evening, Andy.
Well, I tell you what, we've talked to Fred a couple of times on our other shows, Beat the Street, over on CIC, and I tell you what, he's a good guy to listen to, and he's got a lot of interesting points, and he's been around a long time, and he is so much a contrarian that it's really refreshing.
Right.
You know, if you're looking for something that is un-CNBC, you know, or on mainstream financial press, I mean, I think you know, you and I do a pretty good job at that, but he takes it a
right.
step further, so I think this is going to be a pretty interesting evening.
Yes, I think he's on the air now. Hold on a second, please. Fred, is that you?
It certainly is.
Fred, thank you so much. I just gave a real quick introduction, but I did not complete it. Folks, on our line, and our interviewee this evening is Fred, is it Karasch?
Karasch.
Oh, boy, I was pretty close. He's author of 40 Years a Speculator. He's a contrarian investor. I have read his books. I was so impressed, I purchased several copies and gave them out to my friends. We are all becoming contrary investors now. I do highly recommend that you get his book, because after you read it, you will look at investing in a totally different, with a totally different perspective, as I have. And I found it absolutely fascinating. And I owe you a debt of gratitude, Fred, actually, because you opened my eyes to places that I didn't even know existed before. In fact, you dispel so many of my deep-held beliefs, and I'm glad that you did. So, good evening, and thank you for being on our show.
I'm pleased to be here.
Great. Fred, I want the Andy is on the other line, so we have a three-way conversation going. And I also want you to know that in my studio is my lovely wife, Erin, and she'll be doing mostly listening in. She's my sounding board, and she may ask a question from time to time. But we also have three additional lines. Hopefully, callers will call in. All right? So let me start out just with an open-focus question, as they say in this business. Whatever inspired you to write a book?
Well, I realized that I knew something that others did not. I've always known that chasing the herd was not the answer. If you want to have average results, then you chase the herd. But if you want better than average results, you have to find something that the herd isn't doing. You have to have an edge. And I knew I would never have an edge if I chased after Nifty 50 stocks, which is what the familiar name is. Nifty 50 stocks are those giant blue chip corporations that everybody knows. General Electric, AT&T, IBM. These are the dinosaurs that are the blue chip, and in my opinion, they're the stocks of the past and not the future. Take a look at General Electric. It was founded in the 1890s. IBM was founded before 1920. These are not the new upcoming stocks of tomorrow. They are the dinosaurs of the past. And on top of that, they were too expensive for me. And they're too expensive for most of us. At least they were prior to this bear market crash. You know,
Hello, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still.
Okay, I know we got a blip for some reason, and on one of my several computer screens that I have to look at, which drive me crazy. And Andy, maybe you can. There's a little hand that's going up, and I don't know what the hand means. But can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm still here. Yeah.
Okay, and Fred, are you still there? Okay, we'll just continue. I'm sorry. I don't know what that little hand means. I'll find out probably at the end of the show.
But anyway, to get back to what I was saying. And, you know, I realized the blue chip just wasn't the way. First of all, let me tell you how I got into this. You know, I was struggling. You know, I've been an investor since I was 19 years old. And I was struggling to come up with the money to buy reasonable amounts of blue chip stocks. You know, I'm retired military, and I was in the Navy. And you can imagine what my pay was. This is back in the 60s.
Oh, so you started wealthy, Fred. Is this what you're telling us?
Something like that. And so here I am struggling to come up with the money to buy 50 shares or 75 shares of a blue chip stock that's selling at $40, $50, $60 a share. And I just couldn't buy enough. And I realized that there had to be another way. Let me set it out for you. One day, 1968, I was aboard the ship, getting ready to go on watch. My ship was the USS Little Rock, CLG-4, the commanding flagship of the mighty U.S. 6th Fleet. And we were in the Mediterranean, cruising down the west coast of Italy, somewhere between Rome and Naples. And I'm getting ready to go on watch. And I'm reading with great fascination a magazine article about a guy who had made a killing investing in penny mining stocks. And as I read the article, I realized that this was the way because these were stocks that I could afford to buy in bulk. And at the end of the article, the guy said, look, if you want to play this game, you have to subscribe to the Northern Miner. And he left included the address of the Northern Miner in the article.
Right.
And I cut out the article, sent in the address to the Northern Miner, and I've been a subscriber to it ever since. And the Northern Miner is really a jewel. It is the Wall Street Journal of the natural resource world, the mining world, especially
right.
The North American mining world. And it's been in existence, I think they started publishing in 1916, and it's a weekly publication, and I've been a subscriber to it ever since. And that's where I get most of my ideas about the lower price penny stocks and the penny mining stocks that are my forte. And basically, that's how I got into this. I realized that blue chips simply were not the answer for me because I couldn't afford to buy them.
Yeah, but Fred, isn't it conventional wisdom that buying blue chips is the safest way to invest? They generally adjust with inflation, and over the long haul, you do get at least a 7-8% return on your investment, and you don't have to worry about it. You just put your money there, and you can walk away. Why would you want to gamble on penny stocks?
Well, let me say that I think that amount is kind of low. I think that if you include the standard is if you include the price appreciation of the dividends, I think the blue chips over historical period since 1926 will average around 10% a year. But that includes the dividends, and the dividends
right.
is a big part of the blue chip investment.
Right, world. Right.
So you can get about 10%. The problem is, you know, let me give you another story. After I wrote the book, the first person that got in touch with me who had read the book, because in the book I include my email so that anyone who wants to can get a hold of me.
Right.
And he called me up and he thanked me. And this guy was, let's call him Bill from Rochester because that's where he was from. And here's the story he told me. He says, look, I'm 40 years old. I own a modest home. I have a wife and two kids. And my life savings is $8,000. My life savings is $8,000.
Gosh.
I see the future.
Yeah.
And it scares me to death because when I'm 68 years old, I'm going to be working for McDonald's. That's my future.
That's right. That's right.
He says, your way gives me a chance. I don't do guarantees. I don't do guarantees. I do opportunities. If you want guarantees, you go to the bank and see if you can get rich on the crappy 3% or 4% or 5% that they're going to give you. You can't make it.
Right.
And even if you buy blue chips and they go up 10% a year, which is the historical record since, you know, total return, dividends plus price appreciation, you cannot buy enough of these suckers to make it.
That's
for
right.
most of us.
Well, you know, Fred, I totally identify with that. I remember many, many, many years ago when I wanted to buy Rio Tinto when it was a relatively high-priced stock, in my opinion, when it was low back then. And I sat there and I said, well, how many shares could I buy? And I think I wound up buying, like 15 shares, and I was so proud of myself.
Yeah,
you know, and that's what I used to do. And I used to try, well, maybe the stock, I'd like to buy the stock. I think it's good, but I just don't have the money to buy 100 shares. I mean, I don't have that money. I didn't have the money at the time.
Yeah.
And I think that discourages a lot of people from investing in the first place.
Fred, if I could jump in there for a second. It's Andy. How you doing?
Doing fine, Andy.
Good. Just to kind of frame what you guys are talking about with the returns, I think it's probably useful to take a look and understand what the baseline return that somebody actually needs to get to break even. You know, if you take a look at, you know, our monetary system since the Federal Reserve was created, essentially what you've got is a situation where you've got about an institutionalized 5% rate of inflation every year on average. And if you take somebody who's in, say, for example, a 28% tax bracket, that person's going to need 7.25% just to break even. If you're not making 7.25%, you're not even breaking even in real terms. So if you're talking about these nifty 50 stocks, and I 100% agree with that, with your philosophy on that. You know, if you're looking at these nifty 50s and they're making, you know, the average Dow return over the long term is like 8%, you're not making anything. You're not able to. They don't move fast enough for you to actually even stay ahead of the game and to keep your head above water. And that's one of the things I don't think people really understand is how much you need to get just to break even. And I think when people understand that, it kind of necessitates for them the fact that you got to go outside the box and you have to do things differently if you're going to actually maintain the purchasing power of your money or hopefully grow the purchasing power of your money. So, I mean, it really does play into some of the things that you talked about in the book, you know, as far as just, you know, from an inflation perspective of keeping ahead of the game.
Mm-hmm. Fred, since writing the book, when you finished writing the book, did your perspective on on investing change anything? In other words, did the book move you in any different direction by virtue of the fact that you had to sit down, organize your thoughts, and actually put it into writing? And I know sometimes that happens. Did you have any epiphanies writing this book, or do you have any change in philosophy?
I did.
Please tell us about that.
Yeah, I did. You know, for many, many years, I had been, you know, my friends knew that I was in the stock market up to my eyeballs, and I would recommend these stocks that they never heard of. And they would look at me as if I'd lost my mind because they never heard of the stocks. You know, most people want the familiar. They want the stocks that they've heard.
Absolutely, right. That's the way I was, right.
Over again. Right. The Microsofts, the IBMs, the Googles, you know, the safe, familiar stocks that they keep hearing. And if you tell people stocks that they never heard of before, I found out I couldn't get them to invest in it.
Right.
Because they were suspicious and frightened of the stocks because they'd never heard of them.
Right.
And it gradually dawned on me that I was pretty much unique, that I was sort of a riverboat gambler, because I would invest in stocks that these people wouldn't invest in with a 10-foot pole.
Right.
And I realized, you know, that what people have got to get over is that they've got to get out of their comfort zone.
Right.
And they've got to be willing, if they're going to make the big bucks, to invest in the type of stocks that they never heard of before or that are not familiar names. Just ask yourself a question. If you want growth, where is the growth? Is it with the mighty oak tree or is it with the acorn and the sapling?
That's
the
a good point. Right.
Growth is past.
Right.
And the future is with the acorn and the sapling. You got to invest in these young, unknown companies before they become family names.
Right.
Now, while my passion is mining, it's penny mining stocks, you know, I invest in more than that.
Right.
And in fact, I'm really crazy when it comes to diversification. I counted up all the stocks that I own, and I own about 170 positions altogether, and 90 of them are penny stocks.
Right.
So, you know, I got a pretty good balance there. And the way I handle it is this, and I'll tell you what my grand strategy is. I use a barbell strategy, and I recommend everybody use a barbell strategy. That means I have nothing in the middle, and all my investments are in the extremes like a barbell. Because I'm 66 years old, income stocks are an absolute must.
Right.
And the way I divide it is two-thirds of my positions will be invested in income stocks paying a minimum of a 6% dividend, and the other one-third will be invested in speculations that do not pay a dividend.
Fred,
and that's where the high risk comes in.
Yeah. Fred, can I interrupt you? We have a caller that's been holding off for some time. Could we take the caller first, and could you hold that thought for a minute, please? Thank you. Caller, you're on the air. Your question, please, for Mr. Crotch.
Hi, this is John Fanning.
Yes, John.
I wanted to call and ask Fred a question about my situation. He was getting into a little bit about his situation, where his age and income stocks. I've put most of my money on the sidelines and have been kind of on a holding pattern since about early 2008, and have put some money into precious metals and am trying to decide what to do with the rest of my money. I don't have a lot. I've got two kids who are pretty young. One of them's got a college fund that basically over last year, it's a Putnam College Fund, the oldest one, and it basically was cut in half last year. And so I'm trying to find other avenues. What would you recommend for someone in my situation? What would do with what little money I have? Would reading your book and maybe going forward with some of the penny stocks and the mining stocks, is that a good strategy?
The first thing you would have to do is decide out what your barbell strategy is going to be. And it has to be a barbell strategy that you can live with. You're going to have to ask yourself, how much of my investment capital is going to go into the income stocks, which hopefully, and which I would insist on, pays a dividend of at least 6%. And then you're going to have to say, what is it, two-thirds, 50%, 75%, 80% in the income area, and then you're going to have to figure out what the balance will go in the speculation area. So that's the first thing. Find out what your barbell is, and don't lie to yourself. Because, if you lie to yourself, what will happen is, when the market turns against you, you're going to get blown out of your position because you're not going to be able to handle the pain. And that's what happens all the time. you see all these people, you know, who say, well, I can handle it. And when the market turns against them, they just get blown out of their position, where if they were more conservative, they would have been able to hold on to it. And that's the key. You know, the real money is made when people buy in bear markets like this, because you're getting bargains today that are astounding, just astounding. You could throw a dart and you see these bargains. I mean, you can't miss them. But you know, when the bargains are there, people won't touch them with a 10-foot pole because they're terrified. You know, it's an interesting part of human nature that if Walmart or a big store offers bargain sales, everyone rushes to buy. But when the stock market is offering bargains, everyone flees for their life. And there's that dichotomy is very interesting. If you can train yourself to buy when other people are selling, if you can train yourself to buy in markets like this, you will do well. As a matter of fact, I have a blog, which is called 40 Years of Speculator, all one word, .blogspot.com. And I'm starting to, I got about 6 essays on it, and I just published my first article on a penny mining stock, which I'm going to be covering tonight, and I'm going to cover one income stock for you tonight, and as the weeks progress, I'm going to try to see if I can come up with one new stock every week or two. It's not going to be difficult for me because I own over 100 positions. I mean, I'm a fanatic about diversification. And that's the way. But the first thing you got to do is you got to set up your barbell strategy, a strategy that you can live with. Ask yourself, how much do I want on the safe income side, and how much do I want to speculate on? Oh, and then there's another thing. No position should be more than 5%, ever. 5% in a position is the max. And to tell you the truth, if you look at the amount of stocks I buy, you know that I don't do anything close to 5%. You know, if I'm really hot on a stock, I might put 1 or 2% of my investment capital in it. And in the penny mining stocks, my standard investment is 0.25%. And if I'm really hot about it, I might go to up to a 0.5%. And for the absolute champions, I might go 1% of my investment capital. And that's where it ends. You know, for that kind of money, you can afford to buy thousands of shares and penny mining stocks, thousands,
right,
and get good diversification. And later on, when we get around to it, I want to discuss the first penny mining stock that I've written about on my Blogspot. I think you'll find it interesting as I go through the analysis as to just why I like the stock and the type of returns that you can get on these stocks, which when they strike right, can be phenomenal. Of course, the downside is equally brutal. But the point is, you have invested chump change in this stuff. Chump change. And when it turns against you, you simply write it off. Excuse me. You simply write it off on your taxes. You're going to have losses on this. But you know what? Your risk-reward ratio is fantastic on these stocks. It really is, because you're so close to the bottom. And people don't understand, you know, that if you buy a real cheap stock, You know, you could only lose 100% of the max, whereas your upside is unlimited. You're talking about multiples of 100% on these babies. You're talking about 200%, 300%, 400%, 500%. You know, this is a world in which 10 baggers happen. 10 baggers,
right.
10 times and 20 times. Of course, the risk is there, but look at the risk-reward ratio. See, that's the key. If you could only lose 100% and you can make multiples of 100% when you're right, then you have a very good thing going for you.
Is there? You mentioned a newsletter. I didn't get the name of it.
No, it's Northern Miner. If you want to buy my book, 40 Years of Speculator,
right.
I lay everything on the line. It's a newspaper. It's the weekly newspaper of it's sort of the Wall Street Journal of the North American mining industry. It's been in existence since 1916. And anyone who's in the mining industry is familiar with it because most of them subscribe to it. And it tells you all the inside scoop on what's happening in natural resources, and it covers North America like a blanket.
Okay. Great, thank you.
Okay, John, thank you very much for calling in. We appreciate it. Hope that helps you out.
Yep. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Do you have any other questions for Fred? Oop, I guess he's... Oh, no, he's gone. Okay, Fred, very good. Okay, I forgot where we were before our caller called.
Okay.
He was talking about his own...
All right, if you want to, one of the things we can discuss...
Oh, yeah, you were talking about your own investments, Fred. That's where we were. You were talking about your own investments. That's right. Okay, I'm sorry.
Oh, if you want to, I can give you analysis. Do you want me to show you how I analyze a penny stock?
Oh, yeah, that'll be terrific. And, yeah, why don't you do so? Yeah.
All right. This one here is already in my blogspot, 40yearsofspeculator.blogspot.com.
Yes, I did go to it, by the way. It was very well written. I enjoyed reading it.
And, oh, you did?
Yes.
And I want to show you how I can, and see if I can make a case. This stock is one of the most outrageous penny mining stocks I own. It sells for a whopping 2 cents a share. 2 cents a share. Now, if you tell somebody, look, I know a stock that I really like, and it's selling for 2 cents a share, try selling them into buying it. They will think you're nuts.
That's right.
They will think you're nuts, and they won't touch you with a 10-foot pole.
That's right.
But let's analyze this stock here, which I happen to own. It's the most outrageous stock I own because it's selling at 2 cents a share. And the name of the stock is, my God, I almost forgot the name of it. this is what happens when you invest.
It's Copper Ridge, isn't it? Copper Ridge Exploration?
Yeah, Copper Ridge Exploration,
yeah, right.
2 cents a share. All right, now let me show you how I analyze the stock. Now, when you talk about penny mining stocks or penny stocks, the first thing that people are fearful of, and with good cause, is that this might be a fly-by-night scheme or a pump-and-dump scheme.
That's right, yeah, that's right. I get ads all the time on in the mail saying, you know, this mining stock has so much reserves and whatever, and get in the action now, and it's a beautiful four-color brochure, several pages long, and never heard of it, they're not listed or anything, they're on pink sheets.
Let me show you how you analyze. My first rule is, I will not buy any stock that hasn't been in existence at least 5 years.
Okay.
It must have been incorporated at least 5 years ago.
Okay.
And my second rule is it must be listed in either the Toronto Stock Exchange or its brother exchange, the Toronto Venture Exchange.
Okay.
Now, let me explain something to you. Our northern brothers who run these two stock exchanges, the Toronto Stock Exchange and its sister exchange, the Toronto Venture Exchange.
Yeah.
Contrary to popular belief, they do a very good job of taking out the fly-by-night outfit. People
okay.
don't believe this, but they do. And the stocks that I buy have to be listed on the exchange, and they have to be in existence for 5 years. If you do that, you are already eliminated any the over, I mean, how many fly-by-night outfits do you know that exist for longer than 5 years?
Yeah, they are.
How many
yeah,
pump and
yeah.
dump schemes?
That's right. Yeah.
So those two items there will eliminate that. So let's take a look at this copper stock of mine. It was incorporated in 1982.
Wow.
What do we know about it? We know first of all that it's not fly-by-night. And we know it's not pump and dump scheme, and it's listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange.
Right.
So it has met the requirements of the Toronto Stock Exchange. And I want to tell you the stocks, the penny stocks that you should avoid at all costs. And that is, with a few exceptions, the pink sheets. The pink sheets is where most people go, and there is where the true dregs of the penny stock world exist.
Okay, because Fred, I've got to ask you a question because I'm going to forget, and it's critically important, at least to me.
Okay.
I went to go buy a stock that was on the Toronto Exchange, and I'll tell you the name of it. It was Pine Tree Capital. It was not a stock. It was like a close-end fund of a lot of penny mining stocks and whatever. And it was going for around 32 cents a share, 38 cents a share, I'm sorry. And my broker said, he says, well, you know, we don't buy it off the Toronto Exchange. You can buy it here. Now, the ticker symbol was PNP.TO for Toronto. And he said, no, he says, your ticker symbol, if you want to buy it online, is PNPFF.PK for pink sheet. And the price was different. Did I do something wrong?
No, you didn't. Because the important thing is, you see, what happens is that a lot of times the companies or the brokerages will not have a relationship with any Canadian firms or the Toronto Stock Exchange, and
okay.
so they force you to buy it over the counter in this country. But that's not a problem, and it's not a problem because it's not where you buy the stock. The issue is it listed on the Toronto Exchange. As long as it's listed
okay.
on the Toronto Exchange, it doesn't matter where you buy it.
Okay, then let me ask you another question while we're on that, but don't lose your place because I want to intercede because this is the process that I went through. Sometimes after I read your book, I went back and I looked up many of the accounts, the companies that you list in your book. And I would look it up, and then a host of names would come down on the menu. I don't have one in front of me, but let's take Copper Ridge Exploration, which were not one of them. And you'd see Copper Ridge Exploration, and there'll be five or six or seven or eight listings for it. The same company name, but all with different ticker symbols. And I said, well, which one do I pick?
Well, there should only be two. There should be the Vancouver symbol, the symbol that it has in Vancouver.
And which is a symbol? What is a symbol for Vancouver? Could I ask you? Do you know what that is?
Well, basically, what you can do is you can go on the Toronto Stock Exchange website.
Yeah.
And you just type in the name of the stock, and they will give you the symbol on the Toronto Stock Exchange.
Oh, okay.
And then you know what that is. Now, remember, it's typical for stocks listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange to also have their listing in the United States, and like you indicated earlier, and they will be a four symbol or five symbol letters there.
Right.
And it'll be listed on the pink sheet. But the thing is, it's not where it's listed. Is it listed on the Vancouver? As long as it's listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange, it doesn't matter whether you buy it in Toronto or you buy it in the States on the pink sheet.
Right. Okay.
Because the thing is whether or not they have qualified to list on a Toronto Stock Exchange, which means they have to meet requirements.
Right.
They have to meet the requirements
okay.
of the Toronto Stock.
All right, great. I can sleep tonight.
The only thing you guys want to watch there is if you're buying stuff on the pink sheets,
yeah.
a lot of times you end up paying a lot more than if you buy it through the exchange itself. So you really have to watch
right.
that. So if you can compare both of those quotes, you know, if you're buying the ADR, which is what you're going to get through the pink sheets, a lot of times, you know, the gaps are a lot higher on that, the spread between the bid-ask, and you
right.
can end up paying a significant amount more if you buy into pink sheets. Now, if you're talking penny stocks, I mean, what are you talking, a couple pennies? But, you know, if you're going to buy in sufficient quantity, it is something that's probably worth mentioning.
Well, you know what's strange, and you're right, there was a few cents difference between the Pine Tree Capital on the Toronto Exchange and on the pink sheets, but that may have been because one was in Canadian dollars and one was in U.S. dollars.
You have to watch that also, because the TSX shares, if you're getting a TSX quote, they are going to be in Canadian dollars, and the ADR is basically what happens is an American bank or an American investment bank or a brokerage actually buys the shares, and then what they do is they issue ADRs, which are American Depository
okay.
Receipts.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a proxy for a stock, but they actually hold the stock and they issue the ADR.
Right.
The ADRs are dollar denominated.
Whereas okay.
If you're looking at TSX, those are going to be in Canadian dollars, and the same goes for if you're doing something elsewhere in the world. If you're looking at something in Switzerland, being Swiss francs, whereas the ADR would be in dollars
right.
and so forth. But you do have to watch sometimes, because depending on what you're buying, you can get ripped off on the pink sheet. You just have to be careful. You just
yes.
have to check it out, and you have to look at it and, scope it out and see what's what, because every one of them is a little bit different.
Right.
You know, there's not a typical spread or anything like that. It's really on a case-by-case basis.
Well, I felt like a big shot, Andy. I bought 10,000 shares of PNP. 10,000. And Fred, for your information also, I bought it at 32, and it closed Friday. And this is a month ago, and I closed Friday at 92.
Yeah, these babies move. That's fine.
I've died and gone to heaven. I've got the stock invested in heaven. That was great.
One thing I'm... very critical business idea. You don't ever put in the market order when you're buying penny stocks. Always put in the limit order. In other words, if a stock is selling at 15 cents a share and that's where you want to buy it, simply say, put in the limit order that says, I want to buy this stock at 15 cents a share or less, good until canceled.
Okay.
And
all right.
Putting that order in there,
you will get, if
it's executed, you get it at 15 cents. If it's in the penny mining stocks, you put it in the market order and
you
think you're
going to
get 15 cents, you could end up paying 22 cents for the stock and get killed.
Okay,
so
very
always
good.
Always put a limit order in. Don't ever buy at the market when you're buying penny stock.
Yeah, great advice.
Like,
great
that's
advice.
That's a good point, Fred. It's not like a lot of these heavily traded stocks
right.
where you're talking about millions and millions in shares
right.
a day. Sometimes there's only a few thousand shares or, you know, maybe, you know, 10, 20,000 shares or whatever the case may be. You can really get hammered if you do at the market. You know, it is a different, there is a different style for those. And I tell you what, I put limit orders in occasionally on some of these things, and I've waited a week, 2 weeks for them to
That's
go.
Right. I'll wait longer than that.
Yeah.
I have 14 orders in right now. And some of them will take weeks or months, and some of them will never execute, you know. But
yep.
you've got to have the discipline to put in the price that makes sense to you. And
you know, that makes
exactly.
so much sense. Oh, by the way, that Copper Ridge Exploration, I looked it up right before we went on the air, and it closed at all of 2.5 cents on Friday, so it's still a screaming buy, isn't it?
Yeah, let me get back to that, and let me complete the analysis.
Sure, okay,
so
go ahead.
So I told you the where my starting point is. I know it's incorporated in 1982. I know it's listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange. So I'm reasonably certain that it's not a fly-by-night outfit, and I don't have to worry about pump-and-dump schemes. And now, what do I look at next? The next thing that I look at, and this is critical, is I want to know the float of the stock. That's how many shares of stock are in existence. And when you look at the float on this stock, you find it's higher than I would like. It's 79 million shares. So the total amount of outstanding shares is 79 million. Normally, I like 50 million or less.
Okay.
So 79 million shares. Now, you multiply that 79 million times 2 cents a share, and I believe you come out with a total market value of $1.8 million. Now, this is a phenomenal figure. $1.8 million.
That's nothing.
That means you can buy the whole company, lock, stock, and barrel, for $1.8 million.
That's right.
And I like the ones that have the smallest floats possible, because the smaller the float, the more explosive the stock will be if anything positive happens.
Right, exactly.
Let me tell you what it would take to move this stock from 2 cents to the moon. If three investors invested $10,000 worth of it, bought $10,000 to buy this $10,000 on this stock in the same day, the stock would go to the moon. It would go into orbit. That's all it would take. To get General Electric to double, you would have to have a mountain of cash the size of Mount Everest.
Oh, yeah, it would never happen.
General Electric
yeah,
to double.
Never happen.
In other words,
right.
you need Ben Bernanke to get involved.
Yeah.
yeah.
The government has to print some money, Fred.
So now we know the next thing. I know it's what I'm looking for, a very small cap, only
right.
$1.8 million. All right, the next thing I ask myself is, well, what is the price range of the stock? Every stock has a price range, and it's critical that you be familiar with that price range, because the price range, it tends to repeat itself again and again. Now, I'm going to tell you what the price range of the stock is so you know why. Uh-oh.
Hello, Fred?
Hello. Yeah, I got the same thing, the same message again. We back on the line?
Yes, here we are, yeah. Yeah, okay.
Okay,
I'm sorry, I don't know what happened. I have no idea. It's that little hand that was on my computer screen went away. I don't know what that meant. But everything
yeah.
seems to be
okay. Let's,
working
let me
properly. Okay.
My analysis.
Okay.
I'm trying to establish what the price range of the stock is in prior.
Right.
All right, in the year 2000... And let's take a look at the last 7 years, because I like to get 5 or 7 years so I get a good idea. The year 2000, the range of the stock was from 11 cents a share to 41 cents a share. That tells you that the stock moves and gives you an idea what the range is. The next year, 2001, the range is from 3 cents a share to 16 cents a share. 2002, The range is 3 cents a share to 12 cents a share. 2003, the range is from 5 cents a share to 27 cents a share. 2004, the range is from 7 cents a share to 33 cents a share. Imagine if you bought at the low and sold at the high. 2005, the low is 6 cents a share, the high is 21 cents a share. 2006, the low is 7 cents a share, the high is 25 cents a share. 2007, the low is 10 cents a share to 23 cents a share. And 2008, the year that just happened, the low is from a half a cent a share to 14 cents a share.
All right,
the
Fred
is now selling at 2 cents a share.
Fred, I like it. Fred, hold that thought. We missed our station identification. I'm getting dirty looks from everyone. Folks, this is Liberty Talk Radio. I'm sure people are wondering how they can call in, and I should have given the number out, but I got so enthralled in this conversation, I forgot to do it. Our call-in number is 646-652-4620. Let me repeat that. 646-652-4620. Please call in with any questions. We have, as our guest, we're very pleased to have Fred Karasch. He's the author of 40 Years an Investor, Contrarian Investor, and is absolutely fascinating. If you have any questions whatsoever, please call in. We're talking about penny mining stocks, which is a major aspect of his investment portfolio and philosophy. Okay, so it's 646-652-4620. If you're listening on a rebroadcast, please send your comments to comments@libertytalkradio.com. That's comments@libertytalkradio.com. Okay, Fred, take it away. Thank you.
All right, so I just completed the analysis of the last 7 years, the
right
price range of the stock for the last 7 years, and I think you can realize that if the stock just returns to its old trading range, you're going to make an enormous profit on the sucker, because the stock in almost every year has either gone back into the teens, from about, you know, from 12 cents to 17 cents, and in some years it's gone as high as the 23 cents a share, or 1 year it went to 33 cents a share. The stock today is selling at 2 cents a share. Take a look at the price spread. Take a look at the potential for profit there.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing, yeah.
The only thing that is required to get it back to the old trading range is for the bear market panic to end. If the bear market panic ends, the chances are it will revert back to the mean. I'm a great believer in reversion to the mean.
Right.
And stocks that have been hammered into the gutter revert back to where they were selling for before.
Right.
So now I have, you know, analyzed, given you another analysis of why I like the stock by looking at its trading range. And I like it very much. But I'm a hard asset guy, and now I'm going to tell you what you get for 2 cents a share, and I think you will be pleasantly surprised.
Okay.
All right. Copper Ridge Exploration has a pretty good suite of properties for a stock selling at 2 cents a share. It owns 10 different properties. And let me give you an idea of what some of the property is. The property that I like the most out of the 10 properties is called their Copper Ace property, which is 31,000 acres of land, which is adjacent to the important producing Gibraltar copper mine. Then their second property that is of interest to me is the Lucky Joe copper mine, copper and gold prospect, with 22,000 acres of mining claims. And the last one is the Yukon Olympic copper and gold mine with 14,800 acres. So these two, three properties alone have a total acreage of 67,800 acres. Now, what I'm going to do in my analysis is the other seven properties, I simply threw them out and assigned them a zero value.
Okay.
Because I didn't think that they were the best ones. The ones that were interested, the most interesting to me are the three properties that I just told you.
Okay.
And you get a total of 67,800 acres of mining claims. Now, here's the key. If you divide that total market capitalization of the company, which is $1.8 million, remember that figure?
Yep.
By 67,800 acres,
right,
we come up with arrive at a total value of $26.55 an acre.
Say that again. Say that again, Fred. How much?
All right. $26.55 an acre.
$26. Okay. All right. I see where you're going. That's okay. Very good.
So now I've established you know, that there's some sort of value there. I'm sure that most people will admit that buying an acre of land for $26.55 is a pretty good deal.
It's a screaming deal, right? No matter where it is.
So, based on that, I now know that I have a pretty good value place. What I don't look at is I don't look at the ore bodies. And the reason why is because, unless they have proven reserves, most penny mining stocks do not have proven reserves. Some do, but most don't, and because it's a very expensive process to getting those proven reserves. And once they prove up a reserve body, then they do a feasibility analysis, and then they can go into production. But it's a very expensive process, and most of them, penny mining stocks that I buy, don't have proven reserves, so I simply ignore it. So now I know that I got a value play, $26.55 an acre. Let's take another thing that I look at. I look at the book value of the stock. And you know what the book value of the stock is? It's 7 cents a share. The book value, which is traditionally the liquidation value of the stock, is 7 cents a share. And yet, it is Capital Ridge is selling for 2 cents a share. Let's compare that with General Electric. General Electric, when I wrote this, was selling for $12.18 a share, and it has a book value of $10 a share.
Right.
Can you see that I'm trying to establish this?
Yeah, and General Electric is going for on the cheap now compared to, it was, $40 a share. So, and the book value didn't change at all.
Yeah.
So people were buying it for one quarter of the book value. I mean, for four times the book value. I'm sorry.
That's correct. Ordinarily, they wouldn't. And the last thing I look at is I look at working capital. Now, working capital is very important because that's the cash in the till. That's money available to be spent. And you know how much, as of their last annual report, Copper Ridge Exploration had a working capital of $1,391,773.
Yeah.
If you remember, it's selling at a market value of $1.8 million. And it has $1,391,000 in cash. So the cash on hand almost equals the value of the stock, and you get the mining claim well over 67,800 acres if you analyze all 10 of the mining properties for nothing. In fact, when I did the analysis on my calculator,
Fred?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know why. I have this symbol that I've been doing this for 2.5 years. I have never seen this stupid symbol. Andy, we just lost Andy. We just lost Andy for some reason. Fred, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, we lost Andy, and I don't understand what's going on. I've been doing this for over two and a half years now, and I've never seen a symbol like I am on. I have three computer screens in front of me, and there's one, and I have to ask my tech people are not here, and I have to ask them what the heck that stupid hand that comes up on the telephone number. I hope Andy does call back, but continue, Fred, please.
All right. So anyway, we've established, you know, like I said, the remark that the working capital is $1,391,000. And the total market capitalization to buy the company lock, stock, and barrel is $1.8 million. And so we've established that the cash on hand is worth almost as much as the market value of the stock, and you get all the land claims for free.
Right.
And in the mining, in a deal like this, like I said, you know, I own the stock, and my investment is 0.25% of my investment capital. So you can see that, you know, my risk is minimal. And I think that explains how I think Copper Ridge Exploration might be a pretty good deal.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, for 200, or I think it closed at 2.5 cents, according to the Yahoo, investment thing. For $250, folks, you can own 10,000 shares of this stock. I mean, just think, 10,000 shares of stock. In a company that's worth more than what you're paying for it, it's almost, as they say, a no brainer, isn't it? At this point.
Yes, but you realize you know that I have massive diversification. Like I said, I own.
Oh yeah, right. You wouldn't want to put all your money, but $250. It's like you. I think you're putting you're saying your book for a night on the good night on the town. Yeah,
you could safely go up to 20 or 30,000 shares.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's how I analyze the stock. And in the weeks to come, I will gradually. I'm going to try to put up an analysis of one stock after another on my blog spot.
Okay.
And the Copper Ridge Exploration was the first one, but that gives you an idea of how I analyze the penny mining stocks and establish that there's some sort of value there. You know, it isn't just wild guessing. You know, these stocks can be analyzed once you understand how to do it.
Right. Well, if someone wanted to follow your investment advice, what all they need they would do is they'd go on your blog, right? And
I would encourage them to buy my book, 40 Years of Speculator,
right.
Because that'll give them the in-depth understanding about how
right.
how I operate in a real in-depth understanding of how this world operates. And then they could go on my blog spot and they could read my essays and the podcast that I've already done with Andy and with you when we get it up.
Okay, folks, and that blog spot is you just key in, type in 40 Years a Speculator, and that 40 is spelled out, F-O-R-T-Y, right, Andy? Fred? 40 Years a Speculator, .blogspot.com, and you can read much of what we are talking about here this evening on his Blogspot, and I have bookmarked that, and I will be a regular reader. And folks, do buy his book. Now, typically, I do not have the opportunity to read the complete book of my guest. That's unfortunate because I just don't have the time. I'm backlogged like holy heck. But this one I started reading and I could not put down because every time I put it down, I just had to go back because I had to find out what he was going to say next, because it did shatter every single thing that I thought that I believed in. And let me tell you, I have very large positions with very, very large companies. And I am going to myself personally start divesting myself from that. And I realize what a mistake it's been. And I'm going to do some of this. And in fact, I did it already with this this one account. And I, as I just said before, I bought for 32 cents and I figured 10,000 shares. The worst thing I can do is I can lose $3,200. Worst case scenario. And that stock has been around for a long time. It's a close-end mutual fund, which means there's a lot to go in there, a lot of penny stocks in there, and I've tripled my money in a month already. So, you know, I think this has a lot of promise, folks. Now, I want you to call in. Please, we have now four open lines. I wonder what happened to Andy's phone. I wonder if he knows he's not online anymore. It's 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. Please, folks, do call in and ask any question that you'd like. We have we reserved actually over an hour this evening of bandwidth. So in case we ran over the hour, we would have time to answer any additional questions. So please do call in. Okay, Fred, where were we? I'm sorry, I had to give that little dissertation.
All right. You know, if you would like, we could now go. I've talked earlier about a barbell strategy. You know, I'm more than
yes.
just penny mining stocks, even though that's the part that interests me the most,
right.
because that's where the rewards are. But I also told you that I have 2/3 of my assets in income plays, and if you want to, I would like to present you with an income play of mine that is my current favorite, and to give you some type of understanding of how I analyze these income plays.
Okay, go for it.
All right. The first thing I want to tell you is that I insist in my investment that all my income plays pay a minimum of 6% dividend. Now, and before this bear market crash, when I told people that all my income plays pay a minimum of 6%, they looked at me as if I'd lost my mind, because they know what income plays pay, and they pay you know, the Nifty 50 income plays, or the Standard & Poor's 500s, which is a major blue chip. And they pay 3% dividend, 4% dividend, 5% dividend, and that's what they pay. And when I tell them that I got a minimum of 6% and up, they says, no, can't possibly be true. We know what they pay. They pay 3% or 4% or 5%. That's true if you buy blue chip stocks. If you buy Nifty 50 stocks, that's the return that you get.
Right.
But if you leave that world behind and go into the world that I operate in, which is the small cap and micro cap world, the world of the unknown, the situation is radically different.
Right.
recently, of course, it was at the bottom of the market this November. I made up a list because I wanted to find out what was happening. I, like everyone else, I was getting killed, and I happened to own 33 income plays. And I wanted to find out what the average dividend play, what my average dividend return was on the 33 stocks. And my average dividend play was returning me 22%. 22%. Now, that was at the bottom of the market in November, and it's gotten better since then because there's been a recovery. But these, today, forget about getting 6%. As long as this bear market exists, you have no excuse for accepting a return, a dividend of less than 10%. And dividends of 10%, 15%, 20% are all over the place once you leave the blue chip universe. I mean,
right.
They're there. And I'd like, I just gave you analysis of my speculation, how I analyze the speculation. And now I want to give you the analysis of how I analyze
Fred, Fred, before you go any further, apparently there is a problem with the incoming phone lines. And I want to say this to you now, just in case we get cut off. There's a possibility you may get bumped. Andy, who was co-hosting with me tonight, he just sent me a note and said he cannot get through. He's getting a busy signal. And people are trying to get through to ask you questions. We know that. And they're being rejected. And I don't know why. I have never once had this problem in over 2.5 years, and it is about driving me nuts. Now, I'm afraid, Fred, that all of a sudden you're going to go dark on me, and you're not going to have a line. In the event that happens, and let's just play it safe, in the event that happens, that you get bumped and you cannot get back in because there's something wrong electronically with the phone lines, we will end this broadcast, and then we will have you back again, okay?
Sure, wonderful.
All right, I just wanted to put, now hopefully that won't happen, but if it does, at least we know where we are, we know what we're going to do, and my apologies in advance. I just wish I knew what to do, and there's no one here to help me out, unfortunately.
All right, that's no problem.
Okay,
getting
thank you.
Getting back to how I analyze it,
right.
All right, I'm very big on REITs. The REITs, which is called real estate investment trusts. They're called REITs.
But aren't they doing very poorly right now because of the downturn in the economy, especially the commercial real estate?
They are.
Okay.
And but that doesn't bother me because I'll tell you what I do. Like you said, I'm a contrarian. I've been selectively buying all the way down.
Yeah.
And what will happen is when the market turns, my returns are going to be turbocharged. And the reason why is most people make an appalling mistake. They try to buy what's going up, and they try to sell what's going down.
That's right, yeah.
And there's no way you can do this. I've been at this game for well over 40 years, and you can't do it. There's only one thing that you can do, and this is what's going to make or break you. You can ascertain whether a stock is a bargain, whether it's fairly priced, or whether it's overpriced. And that's what you can do. And that's all I do. Is it underpriced? Is it a bargain? Is it fairly priced? Is it overpriced? And I buy those that are bargains. And history has proven that in the fullness of time, bargains are recognized.
Okay.
And that's the way I play it. And so I'm not concerned about the fact that they're going down because it's making them more valuable. Let me give you my current favorite on my income play.
Okay.
It's a REIT, and I'm going to analyze it for you like I did the income play, and you'll see why I like it.
Okay.
It's called CLB and Associates Properties. It's a commercial real estate investment trust, and this one here is currently selling at a price of $4.49 a share. Now, you know what the dividend is on this sucker? It is paying a dividend of 32%. Can you imagine that?
Are you sure you were reading that correctly? Did you have your eyeglasses on at the time when you read that? 32%. How can they possibly do that, Fred?
Let me tell you what you'd get for a 32% dividend play.
Okay.
All right, it's selling for about $4.49 a share.
And that's CLB
like
and Associates.
You
said CLB and Associates, right?
Right. The symbol on the stock is, just a minute, it's CBL.
Oh, CBL, I'm sorry.
Yeah, CBL is the symbol. It's CBL and Associates Properties. It's a REIT. The high for the year was $27.55, or the 52-week range, and now it's crashed down to selling for $4.49. Let me tell you what you're getting for this. All right, how much did the stock earn? $0.37 a share. This is not the earnings per share. When you're dealing with REITs, you don't deal with earnings per share. They have a special category called funds from operations,
right,
which is the equivalent of earnings per share for a normal company. And when you look at the funds from operations, this is cash in the till that is available to pay the dividend.
Right.
You find out that they could afford to pay a dividend of $3.37 this year, because that's their FFO, $3.37.
Right. Fred, hold that thought for a second. I think our lines just cleared up. Folks, if you're listening and you were trying to call in and you were getting a busy signal, I think now you'll be able to get through, I think. So if you can, please call in 646-652-4620, 646-652-4620. We have on as our guest today, we are very pleased to have Fred Karasch. He's the author of 40 Years a Speculator, a Contrarian Investor. And in these times, folks, when people are trying to determine what they're going to do with their money, money is limited and they're not going to put it in the stock market in a traditional manner because they're afraid it's going to go bye-bye, this is what you should know. I've learned a lot, and you will learn a lot also. His book, 40 Years a Speculator, is a screaming buy. I think it's only around $16.95 or something like that, isn't it, Fred, on Amazon.com? I suggest that you buy it immediately. And if you live next to me, I'll give you one of my several copies. I bought several copies for my friends. And that's how much I believe in this. And I tell you, it is important for your financial well-being to understand what Fred is trying to tell us. And if you have any questions, you can call in and ask any question of Fred, 646-652-4620. I think our lines are now open. I hope we didn't discourage too many people. Okay, Fred, thank you very much for allowing me that time.
All right, let's go back and recap this analysis on CBL and Associates, this REIT, which is my current favorite. It's selling at a price for $4.49 a share. It's funds from operations. Like I said, that's cash in the till that it has available for dividends, is $3.37 a share. In other words, it has in the till almost as much as the market value of the stock. And when you take a look at the dividend that it's paying, it is paying $1.48 a share for the dividend, yet it has $3.37 a share that's available. That means that the dividend is well protected.
Right.
And if you do what, you know, I'm a retired real estate appraiser, commercial real estate appraiser. And in my world, one of the things we looked at when we look at commercial property is something called the DCR, or the debt coverage ratio. In other words, that is how much the debt is covered. For instance, if you have a debt coverage ratio of 1.3, that means that you have 1.3 times the rent to cover the debt. So, you know, your debt would be 1, but you would have 1.3 as the debt coverage ratio. That means you have 0.3 more than
right
than is necessary to cover your debts. And if you have at least 1.3, for appraisal purposes, we regard that as being adequate. When I look at CBL and Associates, instead of having a 1.3 coverage ratio, they got a 3.5 coverage ratio.
Okay, all right.
Which is enormous.
Yeah.
Again, they're selling the price for $4.49 a share. And another thing I look at is the tangible book value.
Right.
This is the brick-and-mortar value that you could realize on the country if it was liquidated tomorrow. Bear in mind that it's selling for $4.49 a share. The tangible book value of the stock is $13.91 a share. If they liquidated the company tomorrow, you would be able to receive approximately that price after they paid off all the debts.
Fred, are you still there?
Oh,
yeah, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought you went bye-bye with the other people. Okay.
Yeah.
We've been losing calls like crazy, unfortunately, tonight. I'm awfully sorry, Fred. I'm going to find
it.
Yeah,
as long as they can hear me.
Yes, I hope. Yeah,
so anyway,
they can.
So the bottom line is that you're getting 32% dividend. Do you know what? These numbers are unbelievable. You know, if you get if you're getting paid a 20% dividend, compounded, because you always should be compounding your money. Anytime on all my income plays, I have them on the DRIP program, the dividend reinvestment program.
Right, I have a few of those, yeah.
Always do that. If you got an income play, you should always have them on the dividend reinvestment program,
right,
because then you get the compounding impact.
Right.
If you compound your money at 20% a year, it takes you 3.6 years to double your money.
That's phenomenal.
3.6 years. At 32%, which is what CBL is paying, you double your money in 2.25 years. 2.25 years.
That's absolutely amazing. It's almost, you just can't believe it, because typically
right,
people are used to waiting 10 years, I mean, if they're lucky, for the stock to double, if it ever does, you know?
And you know, the CBL owns 84 regional malls and open-air centers, 32 associated centers, 15 community centers, and 19 office buildings.
Yeah. All right, let me ask you a question. I'm going to, could I deviate a little bit from just pure investing, just for a minute, okay, Fred?
Sure.
I'd like to ask you. I read an article recently. I do not recall the author's name, because I don't like to reference an article without the author. I feel like I'm cheating, and I just can't remember it. And the title of the article was Ghost Malls, just like ghost towns. And the analogy was that, you know, we saw towns become ghost towns. Now we're going to see malls become ghost malls, because many retailers can't pay that exorbitant rent. And many of these malls are highly leveraged. And we're talking malls that cost, you know, $25 million to $50 million to build. And they have office buildings with them. Where do you see all this going in the overall sense? I mean, where's your perspective on this? I mean,
there's some of it that are going bankrupt right now. But these are the ones that were leveraged to the hilt.
Right.
And, you know, you can find a lot. You know what I recommend? Standard & Poor's. They do great work. My brokerage firm is Charles Schwab. And one of the privileges you get by being, associated with Charles Schwab is that you get free access to all the Standard & Poor's reports. And they're a goldmine. This is, you know, these people do serious work.
Yeah.
And what I recommend doing, in fact, what I will do before I'll buy anything, any of my income plays, is I'll have the Standard & Poor's report. You know, I can print it right on my computer. As a matter of fact, the data that I've been giving you tonight on this CBL is the standard. It's from the Standard & Poor's report.
So if you have an account with Charles Schwab's, you have access to the Standard & Poor's analysis or whatever, and that's free. That's part of the, you know, that's part of their
right.
service.
That's right. You get it.
That is
free,
phenomenal.
And they're very good.
That is phenomenal.
Obviously I have an edge because I've been doing this for so many years. But, you know, it doesn't take a genius to look at things like tangible book value. You know, if you got a...
Uh-oh, we lost him. Fred?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, we got this little symbol back. And, again, I think we're okay, hopefully. But go ahead, keep on talking.
Yeah.
We're okay.
Yeah, like I said, I did the analysis tonight, but if you just look at the Standard & Poor's report, and it's pretty clear, you know, tangible book value is $13.91, and the stock is selling for $4.49. I mean, tangible book value, that's the liquidation value of the firm.
Right.
And the cash in the till is $3.37 a share, and they're paying a dividend of $1.48. Once you analyze this stuff, it becomes obvious that this is really a decent play, you know, that has terrific cushions against the type of disasters that are occurring out there.
Well, why don't we hear more of this on CNBC News? All we hear on CNBC News is Microsoft, Intel, GE, right. You know, just the majors. You hear nothing about anything. And why is it? Why don't they mention even smaller stocks?
Because Wall Street serves institutional investors. It does not serve the individual.
So
institutional investors are only interested in giant blue chip stocks.
So by me listening, really, then there really is not much value in a individual investor as myself sitting in front of the boob tube listening to Marie Bartiromo.
Well, you've got to take everything they tell you with a. I watch CNBC all the time, but I ignore the opinions and just look at the data. In fact, what I really look at is the scroll on the top of the screen.
Right.
What I'm really interested in is what is gold selling for? What is silver selling for? What is oil selling for? What is gas selling for? I'm a passionate believer that wealth in the ground will make you rich.
Right. Okay.
We are witnessing perhaps the beginning of the greatest wave of inflation the world has ever witnessed.
This is what I'm going to ask you next, is where do you think we're going with the economy? And then I'm going to ask you after that what you think of the, I hate to use the word stimulus package because that's what the government tells us it is, but why don't you tell us where you think we're going right now with all this, with the economy and all that?
Well, here's what I would say. You know, the reason why I like natural resources is because natural resources serve a global market.
Right.
In other words, you don't have to worry about the United States because the key is what is the global market does. Because copper, the metal, the steel, iron, aluminum, uranium, coal, these have global markets. And while the United States is a player, more and more China calls the tune because they are the biggest consumer of this stuff.
Right.
And you got something going on that the world has never seen before. It's called the rise of the BRIC nations. Maybe you've heard that the term BRIC.
Yeah,
Brazil, Russia, India, and China.
Right.
These are 2.5 billion people that are industrializing.
Right.
The world has never seen anything like it. Their demand for natural resources is going to be phenomenal. Just phenomenal. When Britain and Europe were getting started, their populations were nothing. Britain today has a population of maybe 55, 60 million. France is 50 million. Germany is
right.
80 million.
Yeah, actually, it's increasing.
They industrialized the amount of natural resources that they needed was minor. You got 2.5 billion people who are going to want our living standards.
Right.
I mean, their consumption of natural resources is phenomenal to contemplate.
Right. So having a investment in natural resources is really having an international play.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And natural resources are the greatest inflation hedge in the world.
You're right.
And you're dealing with a world now in which every nation on the earth is frantically printing money like crazy. The money production is out of control because they're desperately trying to overcome this global recession. And excuse me. And when that printing press finally seeps through to the bottom line, you are going to have a tidal wave of inflation. And while we haven't mentioned gold and silver very much tonight, you know, I'm very big on gold and silver, and I'm invested into it heavily. I'm invested in the whole natural resources sphere because that's where I think the future lies as far as I'm concerned. And like I said, when you bet on that stuff, you're making a global bet. You're not betting on the United
right.
States. You're betting on the world economy. You're
right.
betting on the rise of the BRIC nations. And you're betting on the greatest inflation hedge that exists in the world, which is natural resources. I'm a firm believer that wealth in the ground will make you rich.
Now, Fred, a couple of quick questions. I had one person who knew you were going to be on the air. In fact, I think this person is trying to call in, and I knew the question they were going to ask, and they wanted to know what your opinion was of the government statistics that we get, how accurate you think they are, and if they truly reflect the condition of affairs. I
know
it's a toughie.
I've heard, I've, I've heard the rumors as well as everyone else has. You know, I am sure that you know they're adjusted to be more optimistic than the reality. But that's about all I can say about that.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. Well, there's an awful lot of people involved in developing these statistics, so. The parameters may be optimistic, but I can't imagine everyone getting in there and colluding on the things. But they may not be the way we would calculate them. Let me put it that way. You know, that's the way I feel about it.
The only thing that makes me suspicious, what I'm very suspicious of, is the commodity markets on gold and silver.
Oh, yeah, the COMEX.
It's because they're not making any sense. You know, I, as well as being you know a heavy investor in gold and silver, I'm a lifelong, well, for 40 years, I'm a coin collector. So, you know, I'm actually into the physical metals of gold and silver. And for the last year, there's been a colossal boom in the demand for gold and silver coins.
Right.
And there's a perpetual shortage.
Right.
I think I've talked to Andy about this, and he, you know, confirms that the same thing is happening where he is. You know, you go down there, and instead of picking up the gold and silver coins, you're told you have to wait 30 days, 60
right.
days, 90 days, and they charge you huge premiums over the spot price, which is what the which is the alleged real price, and this has been going on now for over a year. I mean, and it makes you wonder, you know, because you know they keep telling you, well, this, and you look at the price of silver, you know, and it seems $10-$12 an ounce. Try buying silver $10 or $12 an ounce. If you try to buy it, you can't get it at $10.
Oh no! You're right. I've tried, and you're paying for a bullion. You're paying a $2 premium if you can find it. You know.
Yeah, and then you got to wait forever.
Right.
And what this says to me, you know, so it's gold and silver commodity markets that I'm really suspicious of.
Right.
Because you know I can't understand how there can be so much demand on the retail end of the sector. And you know, on the commodity markets, it doesn't seem to register.
Where do you see I'm sorry, Fred. I stepped over your words. I apologize.
Well, I can't recall what I was saying.
Well, let me ask you this question then. It's along the same line. That was funny. how do you see? Some people feel that the available supply of silver is even less than the available supply of gold. Thus, silver is poised to really skyrocket. Do you subscribe to that, or do you know something that you know differently?
Well, I think they're onto something, but you know, some of them are way too adamant about this to suit me. You know, I'm I own a good deal of silver, and a lot of silver stocks. If you read the book, you'll see a whole list of silver stocks.
Right, right.
But like I said, I'm a coin collector, so, you know, I'm pretty heavily into this stuff.
Right.
But I'm not as dogmatic as they are about it. I think there's a strong case for silver, and I make a strong case for silver, I think, in the book.
Right.
But, you know, they want to go much farther than I'm willing to go. I mean, when they say that silver should sell for a price higher than gold, I am.
Where do you think the price of silver is going in the next couple of years? You have any speculation, even if it's just wild speculation or wishful thinking, whatever the heck it is?
I remember when silver sold for $50 an ounce.
Right, I remember those days. I do.
And I think it can go back there. See, in fact, you know, if this wave of inflation hits, and there's every reason to believe it will, based upon the actions, not just of our government, but of the governments of the world, who
right.
are inflating like mad to overcome this global recession.
Right.
I mean, sooner or later, that's going to seep down into wave. And in fact, you know, while the gold and silver has not been very phenomenal, it's been stronger than anything else over the last 3 or 4 months.
Right. Well, what do you think of the gold-silver ratio? It's way out of whack. It's usually about, historically, 15 to 1.
Yeah,
something like that, right? And now it's what, 60 or 70 to 1 or something like that, whatever
yeah.
it is. I have to calculate something.
I could see it returning to the old 15 to 16 to 1. I could see that happen.
Well, but, if silver were to return to $50 an ounce in inflated dollars, inflation adjusted, it would have to go to somewhere around $150 an ounce, wouldn't it? to be equal to the 1981 $50 an ounce?
Well, it could be. That sounds reasonable. In this stuff here, my only concern is that I think that they're too optimistic. I'm in their camp, but I think that they're, like I said, I could see $50 an ounce and maybe $100 an ounce. Some of their more outrageous predictions can't go with.
Yeah.
But it's certainly a good investment, and I would certainly believe $50 to $100 an ounce is possible.
Well, it all depends on the condition of the dollar. If something should happen and we wake up one morning and the dollar collapses, and the $100 that you had in the savings account is now worth $10, then silver gold will automatically adjust, and it'll be, of course it won't be worth any more than it was worth yesterday, but it'll be worth a lot more than your dollars are, so the price will obviously go up. Is that not true?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And where do you see the U.S. dollar? How weak do you think it is, and how vulnerable do you think it is to some sort of cataclysmic turn of events?
I think it is very vulnerable. when I was in the Navy, when we used to go into foreign countries, and get our money exchanged, on shore Liberty. We used to call the money funny money.
Right.
Well, now I'm afraid the U.S. dollar is funny money.
Yeah.
They're pulling things that simply cannot be sustained. And basically, you they simply assume that they can get away with this stuff forever.
Hello, Fred?
Yeah.
Frank, you still there? Okay. I'm sorry. We lost that little hand, that little hand that comes up on my screen went away. And when it does, you blank out just for a second or two and you come back on again. I'm glad you weren't knocked out. Let me ask you a couple. We have a few minutes more. I just want to ask you a couple of quick questions.
Absolutely.
What do you think of investing in fully integrated oil companies these days, like the Shell Oils and the Exxons and whatever?
Well, my problem is that I am simply an anti-blue chip investor.
Okay.
This is a lifelong passion of mine, and I just won't invest in the big boys.
Okay.
What I'll do is I simply find the small cap and the micro cap. I'll tell you what I will do on these. From time to time, if I really like it, I will buy a 2-year leap on it, a 2-year call leap.
Okay.
Because you see, I'm a fanatic upon leverage.
Right.
And
I
want to buy in bulk. I want tremendous bang for my buck, and that'll give it to me. My problem with the blue chips is they're always too expensive for me. This is the only time in the last 40 years you can say, well, maybe they're not that expensive anymore. I mean, who would have thought General Electric would be selling for $12, $10 a share?
Oh, yeah. I mean, never. I mean, it's always been the blue chip of blue chips, in my opinion. And,
Yeah.
Right. Well, if someone who is, I would imagine that you invest an awful lot of time in researching these stocks. Now, if a person like myself, I don't have the time to spend or the inclination to spend doing all this research, should I buy the Northern Miner or should I just go to your blog?
Well, you might try the Northern Miner doesn't cost that much. Just try it and read the articles, and if you find it's a drag, you can just cancel the subscription.
Right.
And if you like it, it can open a whole new world for you. It did for me.
All right. Now, other than your blog, do you have a subscription newsletter for the sake of our listeners?
No, I don't. I'm retired. I'm 66 years old. I'm retired, and I'm staying that way.
Oh, okay. All right. But they can find out what you're doing, basically, through your Blogspot, right?
That's right.
Okay.
They can read my book, and they can start visiting my Blogspot, because I owned if you want to put them all together, the blue the income plays, the whole nine yards. I own 170 positions, and I'm going to start, since I have to do the work anyway, I'm going to start putting the research on my Blogspot, And Copper Ridge Explorations was the first one to come down, and I got a ton to go.
Well, I think Monday I'm going to buy some Copper Ridge Exploration. I'm just going to just trade some stuff off.
Remember, don't chase it. Put in a limit order.
Right. Yeah. I've got an order
for 2 cents a share on that thing, and it's been waiting for 2 weeks to execute.
Right. Yeah. And we can't be anxious. We have to be very patient. And you know what, folks? I also noticed by reading your book, Fred, that you are a buy and hold. You're not a trader, which
That's
I
correct.
Found very. I mean, that really surprised me. I thought you would be the type that would buy today and sell tomorrow and stuff like that, even hours away and as the stock moved up. But you invest the company. You really invest in good companies, as you say in your book. You're not just gambling, but you're actually investing in something, a company that you believe has value, and that your stock certificates have that value, and then you hold on to them.
That's absolutely right. You want to know, I in part of my book, you know, as you probably know, I have a lot to say about Warren Buffett.
Right. You
Warren
mentioned
Buffett
him. Yeah.
Is documented the greatest investor of our lifetime.
Right.
And when you look at the stocks that he owned, you say, what in the world is going on here? There's not a super growth stock in the lot. They are plain. Run-of-the-mill, well, sound, obviously, but plain, ordinary companies. Nothing
right.
spectacular. And
right.
you ask, why did he make the fortune? Well, millions of people have owned the same stocks he did because they're not unknown. And yet they don't have the fortune. Why? And the answer is because he bought and hold, and they bought and sold. That's
right.
The distinction.
That's right. And he held on to stock when people said, well, he lost his touch, he's out of tune and the whole bit, but he always came back with a vengeance. One other thing, Fred, we only have a couple of minutes more. I want to give you this couple of minutes to sort of wrap up, tell our audience how they can, you know, what they should do or whatever. And I'll leave this time for you if you can just leave me a minute or so I can turn everything off and say goodbye to everyone. So why don't you take this next minute or so to wrap things up, okay?
All right. You want to tell comment about how they can get on my blog spot and my book?
Sure. Yeah, please do.
Right now?
Yeah, if you'd like to or anything else you'd like to
All
say.
All right, sure. You can, if anyone is interested in what I've said tonight, you can locate my book on Amazon.com. It's 40 Years of Speculator by Fred Karach. That's Carach. And you'll find out that there's 14 reviews on my book on Amazon.com that you might want to read. And the other thing that I have to offer is my blog, which is 40yearsofspeculator.blogspot.com, and I have 6 or 7 articles on that now, with more to come. I don't sell anything because, I sell the book. I'm interested in selling my book.
Okay.
I am shameless about that. When you write a book, you want people to buy it.
Right.
But that's my only ambition right now, and I'm set up the Blogspot, you know, to more or less promote my book and to write articles on things that I didn't cover on the book and update the book. And I think you will find, if you found what I've got to say tonight intriguing, I think you will find the articles intriguing. I regard myself as a contrarian. I march to my own drummer. You will not, when you read my stuff, you will realize that it's unique, it's different, and it's independent.
Right.
It is not the run-of-the-mill. I don't do run-of-the-mill stuff.
Well, one last thing, Fred. Would you accept an invitation to come back at a later date?
Absolutely.
Okay, Fred.
Absolutely.
All right. I want to thank you so much. This has been a terrific program. I sincerely apologize for our phone lines being down. And maybe next time we won't have that problem, because there's people have been trying to get in here. They've been knocking at the door. They've all been lined up, and none of them could come through. So we apologize for that. Well, I want to thank you very much, Fred. I hope to speak to you again.
Thank you. And it's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Fred. Same here. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Wow. This is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, "Don't steal. The government hates competition." until next Thursday morning, which is our next live broadcast at 6:30 a.m. Central Time. I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.